Hi, everyone, and welcome back to our podcast. Today, we will be talking about the COVID-19 vaccine and the different opinions that come with it, including a college student's perspective, as well as some health professionals' views. But to start off, what is the COVID-19 vaccine and how does it work? This vaccine makes use of a relatively new type of technology called an mRNA vaccine or messenger RNA vaccine. Whereas many vaccines in the past contain a weakened or inactive version of the virus, an mRNA vaccine is completely different. The mRNA that is injected into our body essentially contains instructions for our cells to produce a spike protein that is found on the surface of the virus that causes COVID-19. Once these proteins have been made, the cells display them on their surface. Cells realize that this protein is not usually there, which triggers an immune response and the production of antibodies, something that happens when you naturally contract the virus. Therefore, after getting the vaccine, our bodies are protected from the virus because we have already built up an immune response against it from producing antibodies.
Our first interview was conducted by Alexa, who interviewed Danny, a senior studying informational systems at Weber State University in Ogden, Utah.
Hi, Danny. Welcome. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk about the COVID-19 vaccine. How are you doing?
Doing good. Yeah, thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thank you. So we'll go ahead and dive right in. I'm just wanting to know what your opinions of the vaccine are as far as today, how you feel about it.
Okay, yeah. Honestly, I think the vaccine is great. I mean, it's nice to see something that can hopefully allow us to just get one step closer to going back to normal. Personally, I don't think I'll ever take it, at least not right now. Not until, I guess, the long-term effects are more properly understood. But it's definitely nice to see progress towards returning back to how things were pre-pandemic, you know?
Yeah, totally. And that's totally understandable that there are some reservations present because this is a really new vaccine.
Yeah.
How do you think politics have shaped your trust in the vaccine? Do you think enough science went into its production and evaluating its safety and efficacy?
I don't necessarily believe that politics have shaped my views on the vaccine in any way. I'm certainly more focused on the scientific aspect of it than political biases. But to be honest, I mean, I'm not entirely sure of the extent of the research that went into developing it. But what I do know is that this vaccine operates in a different way than traditional vaccinations. Normally, when you receive a vaccine, you know, your body's exposed to a weaker form of the virus, which sort of allows your immune system to develop the antibodies necessary to fight off the real deal should you become exposed. But I don't know, given the novelty of the COVID vaccine, I'm just not comfortable receiving it until more research is presented about its overall effectiveness. I mean, I guess I'd prefer to stick with the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I know that you mentioned that you are optimistic, though, that there is a solution out there. Definitely. Do you think that there would be another way to curb this pandemic, or are you reliant on the vaccine route of going back to the normal life that we lived before?
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, personally, I don't think I'll ever get the vaccine, but I'm definitely not suggesting that nobody should get it. You know, I do think it's smart for those who are most vulnerable, like, you know, the elderly and those who are immunocompromised, to receive the vaccine and to protect themselves. But for me, I think I'm certain that I'd be better off if I was just exposed to the virus as is, or, I mean, for all I know, I could have already been exposed to it during the pandemic. But, you know, I definitely do think a vaccine is the best way to curb this pandemic. But I also believe that the pandemic in its entirety could have been handled differently, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, I guess the country didn't necessarily need to shut down. I mean, an alternative solution could have been to protect those who are most vulnerable, you know, and then just allow everybody else to carry on with their normal lives. And eventually the population as a whole would develop herd immunity in a sense.
Yeah, interesting. So, yeah. So you're discussing like alternative ways to gain antibodies for those that aren't vulnerable
right,
as much as, okay, that's totally understandable. So if you could ask a scientist anything about the vaccine, maybe the research production, what went into creating the mRNA version of vaccine, what would you like to know more about specifically that might make you more confident in receiving the vaccine yourself?
Yeah, definitely. Everything that you said was great. I'd definitely like to know more about the exact way in which it operates and how it defends against COVID-19. I haven't necessarily done my fair share of research, but and although it would be difficult to tell at this point, I would love to know, you know, if there exist any negative long-term effects, you know.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, with the information that I know now, I'm just still a little skeptical, is all.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much for your insights. I think a lot of people can echo your same sentiments. Thank you so much for your time, and have a good day.
You too. Thanks.
Bye.
Our next interview is conducted by Mike, and it's with Lauren, who's an ICU nurse at Hackensack University Medical Center in Hackensack, New Jersey.
So, what was your experience like on the front lines of COVID-19?
Okay, so I've been an ICU nurse for the last 15 years. I've been a nurse for 18. And what I can say is that it's nothing that I've ever experienced before in my line of work. It is a completely new monster that kind of was just thrown at all of us. I know that, you know, I signed up to be a nurse. I know that I signed up to take care of people. I never knew that being a nurse would entail being put at such high risk. When COVID came, yes, we had stuff to protect us. You know, it wasn't always readily available in the very beginning, and it would run out. We would have to reuse our masks for extended periods of time. They throw this big, huge, gigantic monster at you and then tell you you have to change your practice. And it was super scary. It was very, very different than anything I've ever experienced. And then on top of that, taking care of COVID-19 patients is just extremely, you know, strenuous, mentally, physically. These people are dying. They have no one with them. It's horrible. It's like nothing I've ever seen.
Adding on to that, did you ever feel like there was no light at the end of the tunnel?
Yes. And unfortunately, I mean, I think a lot of us were really nervous that a vaccine was coming, but really hopeful that a vaccine was coming. Obviously, everybody kept saying a vaccine's coming, a vaccine's coming, a vaccine's coming. But like when you do this for 12 hours a day, 3 to 4 days a week, it doesn't feel like there's anything that is ever going to go away. And it's still, in my opinion, I don't think it's ever going to go away. I think our world has changed forever, but I think we have to brace ourselves for having to take care of these COVID patients forever. I think it's going to be something similar to maybe like the flu. I don't think it's going to be as bad as the pandemic that is currently, but I do think that I will be taking care of COVID-19 patients for the rest of my life, as long as I'm a bedside nurse.
So transitioning a little bit, do you think there is a significant knowledge gap between the medical world and the general public on COVID-19? And how do you think doctors, nurses, et cetera, could help bridge this knowledge gap?
I mean, our media plays a huge part in this. Other than being vocal about what we've seen, I think people do sometimes think doctors and nurses are overplaying it, to be completely honest with you. I know my family in particular, according to them, I'm like their Dr. Fauci. So whatever I tell them to be true is kind of what they go by. And I know that to be true for a lot of our family members of the nurses who we're working with. But people outside our families and our immediate circle, I mean, I've sat down with other people who are family members down the line who think that this is like a political statement. I just walk away. Those people are never going to be changed. I just walk away, let it go.
Yeah, that's so very true. Transitioning more into that political side, what are your feelings about how politicians and I guess the general public themselves have handled this pandemic, like the response to this pandemic?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was very unfortunate in the beginning. I can't say like I'm huge into politics and that I follow everything, you know, front line, but unfortunately I do think that if we would have mandated a mask policy for the entire country in the very beginning, I don't think we would be in the place that we are at. I unfortunately think moving down, making it state by state optional was kind of where I think this country kind of failed, to be completely honest with you.
Transitioning more to the vaccine side of things. Do you think the vaccine process has been rushed at all?
No, I don't. I think finally something in medicine got the attention that it deserves. Unfortunately, I think it got unlimited funding, unlimited resources. And I think that's why there was no red tape, to be completely honest with you. I think a lot of things in medicine, there's a lot of red tape. There's a lot of different things that kind of go into making certain medications or vaccines or doing research for cancer or whatever the case may be. And I think they have their limitations. I think this had no limitations.
Yeah, definitely. And then last question, what would you tell people who are on the fence about getting the vaccine?
Do it. I mean, I was hesitant myself. I mean, I wasn't the first person in line to stand up and get it. But I think at this point, this is the only way our lives are going to ever potentially change, not necessarily always go back to normal. I think, you know, this is always going to be there, but I think this is really the only hope for our future.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
No problem. I'm happy to help.
Our last interviewee is an ER doctor in New Jersey, and he was interviewed by Mike. He actually preferred to remain anonymous and unrecorded, but he echoed very similar sentiments to the ICU nurse. He said basically they had to convert the entire hospital into an ICU. Operating rooms were being converted for ICU use. He said it felt similar to the AIDS epidemic, in which there was just such a fear of the unknown and a hesitancy to work intimately with the patients in fear of contracting the virus, and just the environment was terrifying. When asked specifically if he considers there to be a significant knowledge gap between the general public and healthcare professionals with regards to COVID, and what is the role that doctors can play in amending this knowledge gap, he responded as follows.
He said 100%. He said, the media makes money on advertising. They need viewers. So they have done a tremendous job creating fear in the general public, whereas other more conservative outlets have also played it down too much. And then you see places like Florida where people don't even wear a mask. He said a patient of his last night refused to take a cotton swab and said, I don't want to be swabbed. And he had to kind of restrain himself from being like, what are you doing? You know, why, what's your reasoning? She didn't have a good reason, just refused. So he said in terms of doctors communicating better to the general public, he said it's a challenge. There's such a media control that there's a significant barrier between the medical field and the general public. He said, obviously direct communication at the physician, the patient level is important, in terms of calling them, emailing them, and just kind of avoiding that middleman. He said, at the same time, though, there's a lot of pressure on him and other doctors by the owners of these hospitals to see as many patients as they can. And it makes it really tough to truly communicate the facts about COVID to patients when you know the more patients you see per hour, the more money these hospitals make. But at the same time, there shouldn't be any money left over from these patients, but yet these hospitals are trying to overbill, which kind of takes it right over the doctor's head, and they're acting as a middleman.
Lastly, when asked what he would say or what advice he would give to people on the fence about getting the vaccine, he said as follows.
He said, don't think about yourself, but rather society. So it's unwise to put yourself at risk or put others at risk just by not getting vaccinated. He said mRNA vaccines are not new, so this shouldn't be such a scary new concept to people. And the science definitely backs it up that it will work. So yes, that was my interview with an emergency room doctor from New Jersey.
Following the interviews, my fellow podcast hosts and I all sat down to debrief what we had gathered from our interviewees. We wanted to discuss not only the discrepancies in knowledge and experiences, but also talk about what are some solutions moving forward so that we can actually once and for all mend this knowledge gap that we've observed between the public and healthcare professionals. We first wanted to talk about Danny's point in which he said the most vulnerable populations should get vaccinated while younger people, such as those in college or high school, who he kind of describes as less vulnerable, should just be able to kind of live on as normal. And so we wanted to kind of discuss this statement in particular and some of the research and data that supports why everyone should get vaccinated. There is no such thing as like most vulnerable and less vulnerable when it comes to this type of pandemic, and that it is kind of an all or nothing to achieve herd immunity.
According to the CDC, the highest positivity rates are actually among people aged 18 to 24 years old. So even though they're not showing the worst symptoms, they're actually likely responsible for the highest rates of transmission. So like in that sense, it's like vaccinating only the most vulnerable, it's like, yeah, that's a great solution to limit COVID symptoms in people who will develop them worse. But also like the people transmitting them at the highest rates are younger people. We're just not, for the most part, experiencing symptoms to the same severity, though some people are. And so I think that's a great kind of, I think it's a fact that often goes overlooked when people are talking about like who gets vaccinated, and that us young people have a responsibility and play a large role where it's like, if we can get vaccinated to just slow the transmission, because we're the ones testing positive the most, that responsibility kind of falls on us.
This idea of getting vaccinated for others led us to the notion of altruism that is really pervasive in Sweden, especially with regards to vaccination, which Mike elaborates.
The vaccination success rate that they had in response to H1N1 or swine flu. And it just kind of talked about how there was like a lot of agreement between the like federal government and then like local regional authorities. Which I feel like obviously now in America, you see like a huge breakdown, whether you're in New York or LA or you're in Florida. So there's a huge discrepancy there, which I thought was interesting to see. Like, obviously it's a smaller country, you know, so it's a little easier to do that, but still obviously a lot of polarity here. But also they talked about like altruism and how they really got people to buy into the fact that you're getting vaccinated not for yourself, but for others primarily. And I thought that was interesting, you know, just kind of how could America, I mean, obviously the whole world, but America really get that point across to the younger generation, Hannah, like you said, who is, you know, really responsible for transmissions, like now at least. So kind of like speaking to altruism, I don't know, would be kind of interesting. See if America can really do that, but I don't know. There's obviously a huge discrepancy right now across the country. So,
yeah, it's so interesting with the swine flu as an example of like vaccination. Because I remember as a kid, like the actual rates of transmission for the swine flu, not that big a deal. But I remember like that was everyone's primary concern, was preventing people from getting sick from the swine flu. Especially because kids were dying from it, which that goes down a rabbit hole of like whose lives we value, because people are like literally elected officials are like, only elderly people are dying. And it's like, okay. So that leads down a whole other rabbit hole. But it's just so interesting, like there's just been such a shift in like the political tone of the country in the past like several years. And so we've like,
what's being like kind of the values imposed onto the public look really, really different right now. So instead of like focusing on altruism, where you had all these different levels of government being like, altruism is good, let's protect those around us. We've had a bit of a shift more to like, I will protect myself, then if it's convenient, we'll protect the people around me. Then if it's really convenient, we'll take one step further to protect people I just interact with daily. So we need more of like a trickle down ethics where you care about like everyone, then down to yourself. So I think that's kind of an interesting point you bring up around like altruism is there's been such fluctuations in the actual presence of altruism in the nation recently. So the political nature really affects science in a sense.
Yeah, I feel like just looking at the two different like societies, like America versus Sweden, I feel like you just have like a very different values and ethic.
It's basically personal liberties versus altruism. And for example, in Sweden, everyone has an altruistic mentality to help their neighbors and peers by getting vaccinated. And they're not just focusing on themselves, but they're actually getting vaccinated for those around them, even if they don't agree with vaccines. This also comes with their overall trust in the government. You don't only see that here because of the polarization fostered by our media. Like, Americans are a lot more selfish, and that's something that has just been inherently ingrained in us from capitalism, whereas Sweden is a socialist society, so they're a lot more holistic in helping their neighbors and peers. It's just a difference between the two mindsets. Like, it's basically selfishness versus altruism. It really juxtaposes the societies between the two nations, and it's really demonstrated in the Swedish vaccination campaigns, which were largely successful in the past with the swine flu and Spanish flu.
Yeah, for the next pandemic episode that we have to watch, it really focuses on the anti-vax movement in Oregon, like how they're trying to pass that bill that would require children to get vaccinated before they go to school. And the purpose is to protect like vulnerable children, right, against like these diseases if they have compromised immune systems and can get seriously sick from the diseases that the vaccines protect against. And one of them being measles, it's a deadly disease and it should have been eradicated 20 years ago, but it's not because of the anti-vax movement. And basically like the courthouse has a hearing and both sides, like anti-vax and pro-vaccination, like discussed why they believe what they believe. And the anti-vax side really focus on individual liberties and individual freedoms. And then on the flip side, you had parents who were pro-vax, like talk about how their children like had cancer and they have to rely on like the community being altruistic for their children to like survive like in public, you know, because if they were to get infected with measles, like their life could be at serious risk. And so like, I just don't know how people hear that and think, oh no, like my individual freedoms are more important than like your children's life who could die. I just don't understand. But I guess like the government officials who were sitting on that hearing empathized more with that anti-vax side and the bill. I'm sorry, I'm like ruining it for you guys because you're probably gonna watch it. I just can't believe how much like traction they gained from their like cries of their autonomy like being taken away. Like, I don't know, I think public health ethics needs to be considered separately than like individual ethics because it's very community based and it's like you have to consider the health of others, you know. But you're right, Hannah, that like it's just not like that anymore. Individual liberties are weighed heavily.
We also wanted to address the knowledge gap we noticed about mRNA vaccines in particular between our health professional interviewees and Danny.
When people hear like an mRNA vaccine, it sounds super scary. But something that I've heard is like, if you think about being injected with that compared to like a virus actually hijacking your cells, that is much scarier in reality. And a lot of people don't realize that like the mRNA vaccine is just like a small strand of DNA that goes into your cells, and that's not going to do as much harm as what people think.
Yeah, it's kind of like you see people's attachment to like what's traditional is almost overriding the logic of it. Like people are like, oh no, let's just go back to injecting the virus into my body because that's what I'm used to in a vaccine, versus like, hey, we've improved it. We're not going to put COVID in your body. We came up with a different strategy, but because it's unknown, people are like, oh my gosh, what are you doing to me?
Lastly, we wanted to talk about a potential solution to bridging the knowledge gap between the public and healthcare professionals.
Just talking to healthcare professionals, whether it's just people who are on the front lines in your own like community or that you know of, like it was really tough for them. And so hearing someone express that also might appeal to the shred of empathy some people have left at this point, to be like, oh, okay, that's not my experience with COVID. I've been chilling at home. And so I think that could also be helpful if they could both kind of give you that insight into what this has made their lives like and what they're seeing daily, and also simplify it verbally to you. That could be really effective too.
And also to touch on what you just said before about like talking about like the horrors of it, if you will, and like their experience. In like all like action movies or something, when the like protagonist gets in like a sticky situation, like, oh, this is not what I signed up for, in every movie, or like, this is exactly what you signed up for, you know? But even like the frontline workers are like, this is like, you know, this is what we signed up for, but even like we didn't see it coming. So I thought that was like not funny, but kind of like parallels to like movies and stuff. But it was like real life. So interesting to see like how crazy this was, that even like people who know what they're getting themselves into, like are trying to save lives, like even they didn't see something this like scary coming. But that was also pretty interesting.
So in conclusion, we have seen a stark polarization of opinions about the COVID vaccine recently. Those who are for or against getting the vaccine. As mentioned by our guest today, this difference in opinion is largely due to the knowledge gap between the public and health professionals, and has largely been exacerbated by the discrepancy in information disseminated by different media outlets. Liberal outlets have been called out for over-dramatizing the pandemic, whereas conservative outlets have been accused of doing the opposite and downplaying the current situation. This causes a disparity between people remaining informed and those who are not. Just like our guest said, this results in people falling on both extremes of the spectrum. People who are afraid to leave their houses even for groceries, and people who are going out to party every day and treating everything like it's a joke. The current pandemic has proven to be a major public health crisis. This means it's a community effort. People can't be selfish in deciding not to get the vaccine just because they don't want to, because your decision directly affects those around you. There has been a lot of research already conducted that suggests the current Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are safe for the public, and possible adverse effects are being closely monitored by the locations dispensing the vaccines. But as our last guest said, mRNA vaccines aren't new. People shouldn't be scared because they've been used before. For example, in 2017, a Zika mRNA vaccine was tested in mice and demonstrated to be a safe alternative. This situation is a testament to the fact that public health ethics should be prioritized over personal ethics if they aren't directly allergic to the current vaccines themselves. Even then, you should be open to getting vaccinated in the future if other alternatives are offered. The current public health initiatives are the responsibility of the community. We need to work together if we want to beat COVID and return to normalcy. We hope you enjoyed our podcast, and thank you for listening to us today.